turn it over to you.
Well, thank you. This first week of the session has been more of a ceremonial thing, if you will. The governor's give you state of state message. Wednesday, the judiciary, the judge, the Supreme Court gave his message, state of the judiciary. And so it's just been kind of trying to get our feet on the ground, get things together. And then Wednesday, is I'm chair of the judiciary, and the staff sat down with me. I call her my girl Friday because she's an attorney and she knows more about it than I do. But anyway, so we went through the stack of bills and named the committee chairs, and some of them will obviously not be taken up. Some of them will, and we'll work through that as we go down the line. And there'll be more coming. So that's basically what we did. I went to Washington, D.C. on the 5th of January. I'm the vice chair of Ag. I used to be the chair, but now I'm vice chair because I've got the other. So the Ag chairs and vice chairs from all around the United States meet once a year. And this year we met in Washington, D.C. Congressmen were all out of town, so we didn't get to meet with some of those. We kind of wanted to, but Secretary of Agriculture Vilsack spoke to us for about an hour, hour and a half, answered a lot of questions, talked about some of the stuff that's going on. And then when I got back into Des Moines on Sunday, I stayed over and we did our three days. I came home Wednesday night. My wife has had a lot of problems with her hip, and so she had a doctor's appointment yesterday, so I came home Wednesday. I don't know what they did yesterday, probably not much. And so that's kind of where we're at. We're just trying to get our feet on the ground, get going, try to sort things out. I think the consensus is that we will raise gas taxes, probably not this year. This year, we're kind of letting the Department of Transportation try to find some savings in their organization. And then the plan is, I believe, to raise the gas tax 4 cents next year, 4 cents the following year. The governor originally said that was off the table. We weren't going to talk about it. But he did say, if you guys send me that kind of a package, I probably will accept it. So we're getting to the point where the crunch is on. The DOT just has to have more money. You got to realize that Interstate 80, Interstate 35 is wore out. It has to be replaced. And we've been replacing some sections, but those roads were built back in the 60s, and the typical life of a concrete road is 30 years. And so we got to make all of our efforts to try to fix those roads, and so I think we'll probably see the gas tax increase, and of course jobs. Well, you all hear that from everybody, jobs, and so we're going to be really working hard to try to create some jobs. Some of it will be some property tax relief for commercial property, and the big issue is do we give the Walmarts and the big box stores tax breaks, or do we concentrate on the smaller businesses? And I'm of the opinion that we need to concentrate on the smaller businesses, help them out. So anyway, that's kind of what we've been doing, and I'll stop there.
Excuse me. Did we have some join us, some visitors that didn't get an opportunity to introduce themselves?
I'm Bob Horowitz. I'm the Senate candidate for District 42. My wife, Charlie Gobble.
One other? Didn't somebody from school join us?
Oh, sorry. Greg Reynolds.
Thank you. Representative Kearns.
Thank you, ma'am. Well, it's been good to get back into the House this year. We've had, I think, a positive welcome from both the governor and both parties' leadership. They've talked about a little bit more working together, a little bit more compromise possibly this year than we've had in the past. And if that Of course, that's first week. If that continues, why, you know, I think we'll get maybe a couple things done this year. I serve on the Ways and Means Committee in the House, and right off the first week, we had a bill, House File 500, introduced concerning the commercial property tax. And so, as you know, we had that last year as well. There was competing bills from the Senate and the House. The Senate's version was much more to my liking than the House. But we couldn't compromise on that. We couldn't work out a bill last year. So I think there's a better opportunity maybe to do that this year. And again, that's one of the big issues up there. Our caucus's theme or direction this year is jobs, and jobs for Main Street, and economic relief for Main Street in the way of property tax relief, but Main Street, not necessarily Wall Street. And that, you heard the senator talk a little bit about that earlier, about, you know, the property tax relief that we were talking about on a commercial basis. We're talking about a whole bunch of money here. And to do that, if you go to 40% cut, which they're talking about, rather valuations, it's 100% now on commercial property, you pay on the total 100%, taking that down by 40% to 60%. And, you know, overall, the impact of that's probably $1 billion. You'll hear $500,000, but really impact when we're done would probably be closer to $1 billion. I don't want to strangle local taxing bodies and schools and counties and cities with replacing that. Now, true, there's three divisions to the bill, and one of them does increase the school aid from, well, I think it's 87% now to 100% of the formula. So that would give some relief kind of in a backdoor way. The problem with that is the next legislature going to go ahead and fund that. We've had legislatures that don't fund it. On the county, you've seen this, where we don't fund property tax exemptions, you know, the military, the homestead. So that's a concern, leaving it out there in the future. The other concept of it is that they would, or another division of the bill is that they would limit your taxing authority for local taxing bodies. That could be a problem. If you're trying to replace that money and they're going to limit you to 1 or 2% or whatever the cost of living, whatever it might be, and you've got some big issue that you need to fund, unless you get a waiver, which you may or may not get under this legislation, I'm not sure you'd have the taxing authority you'd need to go ahead and take care of your local needs. So, and again, you're already giving the 40%, 20% the first 7 years under this bill, then it goes to 40% by into 14 years. The governor's got a competing bill that takes it out, I think, in 8 years, 7 or 8 years. So, you know, we've got a lot of different issues to look through. But that's kind of it on that. That's the big issue I've been involved in the first week, because, as I say, I serve on the Ways and Means. All taxing issues go through Ways and Means. I think the other committees I serve on have not really got into much yet. I serve on veterans. We're talking about a Veterans Day up there. You'll see it on my newsletter. If you don't get it, please tune in on your internet to my site. Click on the newsletter. It'll be given to you by mail every week or so that I send one out. I'd be more than happy to do that. As far as the gas tax goes, I'm not sure that we'll, I'm fairly certain we won't have anything on that this year. I do believe that there will be something next year that may come through, and it could happen. I've said for the last 3 or 4 years I'm willing to look at a gas tax. There's some other competing interests on that, I think, in the way of funding. Maybe if we're going to end up with a lot of transportation that uses other fueling methods, then we've probably got to figure out a way to tax cars that use electricity or use other forms of fuel. So there's something down the road we probably have to think of. By now, by far, most, you know, 99% probably are still fueled by gasoline or diesel. So that's probably going to be our funding mechanism for a while. Tracking and keeping good paying jobs, that's the other thing, and that's what economic development issues we're looking at this year. Some of the representatives have said we need to do that through less taxes, and maybe that would produce jobs. I'm not sure that always produces jobs. For instance, if we give a tax break to the commercial property payers, and it's a big box store, they're headquartered out of state. That money's not going to probably stay in this state. It's going to go back to corporate headquarters, and whether it's Arkansas or New York or wherever it might be. That's a concern to me. Why do we want to do that when we need that money to stay here, produce jobs? Main Street produces jobs generally, locally. Main Street property tax stays in the community, rolls over maybe seven times in the community. That's why I think it's much more important that we keep those tax dollars, relief dollars, if you will, in our own community, not send them outside the state. I'll stop there and take questions. Thank you very much. And thank the chamber, by the way, for having us.
This meeting's about two things, getting updates from our representatives, but it's also about questions, answering your questions, and that's what they're here today for. These guys are experts in question answering. If they don't have the question, they'll get the answer. If they don't have the answer, they'll get it for you. So we'll turn it over to you guys. Please direct your question to whoever you prefer.
I don't know if we're experts. He said his, your clerk or your, not your clerk, but your...
My staff person is
and I have
expert.
To say my clerk's probably more adept at this than me, and that happens to be my wife. So
I said if you can't answer the question, you'll get him. You'll get it.
Thank you, Bill.
Any questions? Who first? Okay.
I just have a concern coming from the Board of Supervisors, and I'm glad to hear you say that you are addressing an increase in the gas tax. For instance, this year, even though we had this fabulous connector around Fort Madison, the loss to Lee County is $137,938 because we now have responsibilities. We have to take care of all those little sections that were left available and no longer come under the state authority, but now put back on the county facilities. So we sort of need that increase in gas tax funding to help meet that deficit. So thank you for addressing that issue. And we look forward to
along those lines, too, I think what everybody is pretty well talking about now is reasonable relief for it's 8 to 10 cents somewhere in there. Is if you're going to do anything, you're going to have to do 8 to 10 cents a gallon. And, you know, that's a pretty good chunk. We were talking about a nickel a couple of years ago. But if you're going to bring your roads up to par, and what the senator said about getting our interstates particularly up to par and parceling out to local taxing bodies like county boards, we're going to have an increase like that if we do it.
Well, the governor commissioned a group of people to take a look at that this summer, and they came up with 8 to 10 cents increase. And then Senator Riley in the Senate, who chairs the appropriations on transportation, and Representative Jepsky from the House, they've been meeting also, and they've come to the mindset that we have no choice. We have to move forward and do this. And I would like to just do the 8 cents and be done with it, but the governor, we have to deal with him, and so they've kind of come up with this plan. Let the governor go do his asking the DOT to come up with some savings for this year, and then 4 cents next year and 4 cents the following year. And I think that everybody that I've talked to is amenable to doing that, so I'd look for that to pass. I mean, it won't mean you'll get any more dollars coming here, but you should get some then on down the road. So.
Next question.
Well, on the topic of economic development and job creation and retention, I guess I'm going to speak up and ask about what state legislatures might be able to do to assist our local hospital. I know you're aware of the dire circumstances we face financially because of the inequity in compensation through Medicare and Medicaid. We are diligently pursuing, I'm a past board member, so I'm still a board member, but we're diligently pursuing cost control. At the same time, we're maintaining the quality there. And we need to get support from, at the state level, we're pursuing the disproportionate share allocation. If you, I assume you've received the correspondence we've been sending out. Can you comment to that issue?
I have received all your correspondence and people in the area, and you know, that on your behalf. And so you've been in contact with Congress, you've been with Department of Director Palmer, and I get letters back from them stating what's going on. And it all boils down to there doesn't seem to be anybody can do anything except the Iowa legislature can appropriate some funds to get you through your bad time. And so I turned all that correspondence over to Senator Hatch, who chairs the appropriations, and he said that he would look through it and everything. And so then you have Heaton on, Representative Heaton on the House side does the same thing. So we're trying to get them interested in doing something. And of course, again, money is, I want more money for the corrections, and Heaton, he has a big problem with the human service side of it. It's just so.
But you understand the economic value a hospital is,
yes,
yes,
not
only
yep.
near term but long term for redeveloping the yep. community's industrial base.
Yep.
We need a medical facility here.
And so I, you know, I'll do whatever I can. I've started that process to get those people, because they're going to be the key people to give you $3 million or whatever it is you need to keep going. So that process is going in the pipeline. So Jerry might have some more.
Well, unfortunately, you know, at the federal level, we all talk to our federal folks, you know, the senators and the U.S. representative from here as well, and they pretty well said there's nothing they can do short of legislation, getting some legislation passed, because the Human Services Department director, or I mean the Secretary Sebelius, said there's no way that can be changed unless the federal legislation looks at it. So I understand we went about as far as we can there. Years ago, you could tack something like that on a larger bill, you know, and you could get things like that passed. That's how the bridge in Alaska to Nowhere got put in.
Right.
Yeah, little things like that got put on big bills, and nobody, now you just can't hardly do that anymore. That has become so, prohibitive to do, because everybody's watching it. Nobody will support it because of that. So it's unfortunate we didn't have the problem a few years ago. We probably could have Harkin or Grassley or anybody could have probably slid something in. Probably would have passed, you know, a couple million dollars, whatever it would have taken, or the critical access waiver that we could have got beyond the waiver deadline. It's unfortunate that we couldn't do that. However, we do have a meeting set up next Wednesday. I don't know if you've got next Wednesday with Representative Heaton, who is the chair of the HR committee. I've been invited personally by him to that. And so we will meet, we will talk and see what we can do. It's a matter of convincing folks to put some money there to allow for the disproportionate share matching funds. Now, we can put up, it leverages federal money. It's a great thing to do. I mean, it's not necessarily that we're going to put, I forget what it is, 30-some percent to get 100% or something. Okay. And so, you know, that's great if you can do that. I mean, anytime you can double almost your money as an investment by the feds, why, we're silly not to do that. So we're going to try to get that done. I don't know. We want to get some input from you, and I hope you have the Hospital Association there. Because they said they would be supportive. So, you know, that helps, because they got lobbyists that can talk to folks, and we'll talk across the aisle. But we are going to have to convince the party that I'm not a member of to do it, because they got by far a large majority in the House. And so Representative Heaton, I'll put all the pressure I can on him. He's pretty hard to pressure.
Yeah.
But, I'll do all the talking I can to him. And, when I talked to him earlier, he was talking about how Mount Pleasant's hospital did that long ago. And they're putting up, I don't know, $300 and some thousand dollars locally every year to support their hospital because they did go ahead and go down 25 beds and got the waiver, the critical access designation. So we will do that, and I've been in it from the beginning. I've met with Wally, I've met with Al a number of times, met with the board time or two at least. And so, you know, I'm there. I'll support it 100%. I'll do all I can to bring the pressure on. We are going to have to convince the majority of the House members to support that. And I'll talk to my caucus as well. I think they'll be on board. I think the problem is there's other hospitals out there that's going to say, well, we need some help too. So we got to be able to answer that. We're in a critical situation here. I don't know of any other hospital in Iowa that may be in a critical situation, but we need to really get that word out and try to explain to people why it's so important that Kilcock's hospital needs that.
The demographics in this community are pretty unique.
Yeah. And for those of you that may not be aware, the critical access designation, you got to be 25 or 35 miles. 25 miles if you're 35. And 35 miles within another hospital, you can't get the critical access except during that time that they offered it. And there were some that were given a waiver after that. But there hasn't been any given a waiver for quite some time now. I'd rather do it that way. I think that would be better for us.
That's a whole other set of legislators.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I can see you today.
Yeah. Well, we'll do our best on the disproportionate share thing.
I just thought piggyback on that a little bit. And if you get the easy two-degree separation from the test, to see it as a problem of a poorly managed or low-care, low-quality care hospital.
Right.
And the other thing is make sure that people that have that perspective understand also, as you know, this is required here, the economic development impact that this move will have on this community and in the area. Mm-hmm. And I know you understand that. I'm just wondering if there's anything else we can do to communicate to those that are two steps away that are going to be part of this decision that it's not just the case of a hospital, you know, that's their own damn fault, and that's not the case at all because it's high quality and pretty well managed to this point.
There is some thought out there that it is the hospital's fault because they didn't apply for the waiver. And I think maybe at the time they thought about it, but, you know, they were well above 25 beds, and so they didn't think they should. I don't know if the medical staff said, but wait a minute, we can't go that low. Whatever it was, it didn't happen. We're beyond that now. It doesn't matter. But I have heard that say, well, you should have done that. From members of the legislature up here, and I try to explain, yep, that's in the past. Right now we're talking about saving really a hospital here that has an economic impact on this area. So I understand that, Chuck. I appreciate it. One thing you might do, anybody that's interested, you might write a letter of support and send it up with you to the meeting. I don't think that would hurt anything. Like the chamber, like Morris Rubber, like Roquette, like the school system, like anybody that might, the city, that might do that. The other thing is, of course, we talked about local matching funds. We may have to have a fund drive here to leverage state money with local money. That's also been brought up to me, such as Henry County does or Mount Pleasant does. They do support theirs in that way with local matching funds. And that might leverage something from the state saying, look, you got the local people willing to put up some money here from taxpayers locally or from private individuals or from private entities or organizations that might help loosen up some of the thought there too.
Next question.
Could the commercial property tax cuts, could those be linked to current employees that you have actually increasing that number or increasing their base wage, and the same with new employers that they pay a livable wage? Is there something that can be added into the legislation in that order?
Could be. I think the problem is if we're trying to, at least my caucus is trying to aim it at small businesses. I heard from a number of people that say, look, small businesses may not add a lot of jobs, but they hang on with some relief. So that they, if you cut their taxes some, they'll be able to stay in business rather than go out of business. That's the difference for them. It's not so much lots of jobs. Might mean a part-time job or a job. depending on the size of the business. But yes, there's been talk about that, leverage or tying it into job creation. That's not necessarily bad, and you know, what we're talking about in the first year is first $100,000, and then going up to $200,000 of valuation and over a stepping stone over a period of years doing it that way. That's the House provision right now. I think probably the Senate's version is still my choice. It goes up slower. It doesn't affect your local taxing bodies near as much as the House version does or the governor's.
Thank you.
So this we're trying to shift. We're trying not to shift it to the local homeowner or the farmland. And so I believe our plan does a pretty good job of not shifting that. The state comes in and picks up some of that, so the cities and counties don't get whacked too hard. And that happened back when we did the machinery and equipment tax, done away with that. State come in and picked it up for 3-4 years and then started weaning it back. Because the theory behind that was you take that tax off of businesses, then they'll increase and they'll hire more people and everything will be rosy. That didn't happen, but in my opinion. But anyway, this is kind of along those lines, kind of, you know, keep businesses out there. And so just to help.
Next question. Yes, Anthony.
Could you talk a little about the governor's Healthiest State initiative? And also I'd be interested in knowing what the state is looking at as far as legislation for cell phone usage while driving. And, you know, to Jeff's point and the rest of Keokuk Area Hospital, for a Healthiest State initiative, the first place in this community that anybody would turn, of course, would be the hospital. Mm-hmm.
Actually, I haven't had any conversation about the cell phones. I agree they ought to be. I guess we did pass the texting thing, but still, and no one under 18 is allowed to use a cell phone, I believe.
Right at all.
And right. Yeah, and so we need to expand on that. I was coming down from Iowa City yesterday, and a guy ahead of me was. I was starting to pass him, and I backed off because he went over into the other lane, and he was back. And finally, I passed him. And there he's on this cell phone, not paying any attention to what he's doing. And we need to push hard on that one. Try to, if you really need to use your cell phone, pull off the side of the road, or get one of those mounted on your head, and so you don't have to be distracted.
Common sense would come when you're looking at a gas tax increase. What would the revenue be realized if we started handing out tickets to people that are close to killing other drivers?
And I'm sure the troopers are watching for texting stuff and of course seat belts.
Right.
You know, people are pretty much when they're out on the highway, they got their seat belts fastened down because that they can't stop you unless they have a cause. And I've ridden with the troopers quite a lot, and going down the road and he meets or whatever, and whoa, no seatbelt. And then you find other things while you're there. This one particular case, the guy had a partially open bottle of wine sitting in there. Just because he didn't have his seatbelt fastened, it cost him pretty good money. So anyway, the seatbelts, I think people are kind of pretty much in tune to that. Cell phone thing can go down that same road. You meet somebody on the cell phone, they're going to pull them over. You give them a grace period. That we did that on everything, and that they know at this certain time's coming that they're going to have to. So, yeah, I agree with the cell phone thing. That has to stop. And it's amazing, people do goofy things. We lived in West Des Moines, going down 235, 55 mile an hour, but nobody drives under 65 and 70, bumper to bumper. I look over in the next lane, and a woman has the mirror down. She's putting up makeup on and stuff. Woo! Talk about a scary situation. So people they need to keep their mind on their business. So, what was the other question?
The Healthy State Initiative.
Oh, I really am not in tuned into that, where he's going with that thing. Anything we can do to make people healthier.
Well, you know, and I wondered what you said you're not in tune with it. me, I just wonder, what are his goals? What does he want to do besides, you know, a blanket statement that we all need to be healthier? And I know that there have been some kind of email drives among some of the communities, Muscatine and Burlington come to mind. They're trying to go for the Blue Zone certification, and, and you know, what that will mean, I don't know.
Well, you know, the governor does make some generalization. And in his speech, I think, Christina, did you call me? Yeah, and she wanted to know what I thought about the governor's speech. Well, I thought he made it, I thought most of his speech was generalization, making statements, but no meaning. I couldn't grasp what he where he was going. That may come later, but I really couldn't tell Christina what I couldn't get a hand, get my arms around what he was saying. So yeah. So I don't know what he's planning on doing there. I think that we do really need to make a everybody needs to make a concentrated effort to move away from the obesity and get out and walk and do things and instead of sitting and watching TV all the time. I think we need to make a concentrated effort in our families to do that. And of course, Secretary Vag Vilsack has pushed for healthy diets and get some of the junk stuff out of the schools. And so when you look at the numbers and obesity of the young people, you really shorten their lifespan by letting that happen. So, yeah, we need to work on that, and it's going to take many, many years to start making that happen.
Well, in my defense, as you can see, I'm probably not as slim as I could be, but I do go take the stairs at the Capitol rather than elevator occasionally, and then try to do that, do my part. I think the governor is really, his goal is to cut the cost of health care, to cut insurance costs, things like that. In the end, that's the, and of course, you know, in general, to live longer, live more healthy and happier life is probably I'm not all that familiar with that particular program as well. But in his address, you know, if we were talking about where he was headed, it looked like, you know, the commercial property tax was a big issue with him as he talked about. That's one of the big things that he did talk about in his message. He spent a lot of time on that. So that's probably and his economic development issues. Education was another one. He's got a new education plan out there.
Yeah, can we have a reaction to the proposed educational changes?
I would say that the goals may be good. They've already backed off on the teacher compensation part of it. That's not going to happen, at least not this year. I think it's still in the plan. It's expensive. It's going to cost a lot of money. He's put up something like $25 million in the budget as a proposal this year. $8 million, I believe, of which is coming from other programs within the education budget. So you're not putting up much money for what program you're putting forth, you know, you got at this point. Now, granted, it's not going to happen in 1 year. It's a long-term approach. But that isn't much money to put forth to get the program started, in my opinion. I think the goals probably in a lot of areas are okay. You know, we ought to have third graders that can read. You know, when they leave the third grade, those kinds of things are certainly appropriate, but you got to fund that kind of thing. I'm concerned that the money has been taken away from the educator part of it. I'm a little concerned about bringing in folks that aren't certified to teach necessarily, as apprentices they call them, or mentors, without appropriate background in education. There's a couple things that I got some concerns about it. But I think the intended overall goal to bring our people up to, our children up to par when they get out of school, have the ability to compete in this world right now, is probably an admirable goal.
One of the glaring things to me out of their proposal is to taking teachers out of the classroom, making them mentors, without money to replace them in the classroom, which consequently will raise your class sizes. Defeats what you're trying to do at the lower levels, because we know from years of experience that the lower than class sizes down does a better job making sure that some of those kids can have a little more help and be able to read and do the right things when they leave the third grade. So class sizes, preschool, that's a key thing down at the bottom end. And if you don't do a good job at the bottom end, you've heard me tell this before, but if you don't do the good job at the bottom end, you've got problems the rest of the way through the system. And so so I got a real problem when he wants to pull teachers out of the classroom, make them mentors. That's good. That's fine. But you really got to come up with the money to hire some more people to fill those spots and not let that class size balloon again. So.
Some aspects of the compensation aspect, they're just not going to happen either.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just going to be pressure. But I do have to say that I appreciate the input process of the summit, town hall meetings. We had one here in the community. I don't know if anybody else was there, but to reveal the first proposal, which I think those ended up changing in the second proposal. Another round might change the next proposal.
Yeah, I invited to that community meeting we had for most educators were there, but it was open to the public. But I invited a member of our education committee to come down, Cindy Winkler, who's a representative out of Cedar Rapids area, I think. And she was very knowledgeable. I mean, she's much more knowledgeable. She serves on the education committee than I was about, and I was very much appreciated having her there. She could answer the questions you needed to have answers to. Just let me say, you know, everything we're talking about is got a money connection to it. It's got a dollar cost. Corrections is so underfunded right now that we got guards at the penitentiary that are concerned about their well-being, the community's well-being, because we're so understaffed. And we maybe cut too much into the quick on that. We got the state patrol. We just went to a meeting they had with us at Mount Pleasant not too long ago. It's unbelievable how many less state patrolmen we have now. We've got a higher population, got less state patrolmen, got less correctional officers. The court system, this Chief Justice just gave his report of the judiciary this week to the legislature. I don't know how much they've cut, but I'm surprised they can have court in a lot of cases, and they don't have it as promptly as they should have because of the cutbacks. Clerk of Courts offices are closed a good part of the time when people need them to be open because of cutbacks. We've cut back a lot. And, you know, there's going to come a time when people are saying, do we have a service here or don't we have a service here? And so I'm not saying we got to go out and tax and spend, but we've certainly cut to the bone in a lot of cases.
Along that issue, tourism brings in a lot of money every year, a lot of tax dollars. Is the school start date going to come around again? A question on that.
I haven't seen anything yet. Of course, it's just been the first week. Or
Well, there's been discussion to extend the school year. Whether you stay longer in the spring or stay, and then I've been in discussions where they would like to break it up. Maybe a month off and then back to school and then a month off and to make sure the kids can retain what they've learned. That's a big problem we have. Anybody in education will tell you. When you take this kid and give him 3 months time off, it takes quite a while for him to pick it back up when they come back in the classroom. And so that's a real big problem. So there's a lot of discussion going on, but I haven't seen anything concrete about it. Kirk, I know that's a big, John Putney used to, you know, he's involved at Iowa State Fair. And he used to just always want to make sure that school start date was after the fair.
Yeah, so. It is cutting into the fair.
Yeah.
Some schools started as early as August 12th last year, and the fair started on the 12th.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it is detrimental to places that, like Okoboji, for example.
Yep.
Representing Mays is always on top of that because he's in that business, but it takes tax dollars away,
the
shorter the
summer is. Jerry, I just want to make you aware, too. I went to Iowa Hospital Association meeting Wednesday, and we had two different groups come expressing that pinch of federal and state dollars being cut, which I from the hospital perspective, and I think a public good, these two entities do a tremendous benefit for us, and that's the Poison Control Center. They are way short on funds and are asking hospitals, who certainly don't have a lot of money these days either, to help fund that service that they provide on a per use or a annual fee based on bed size. And then the state morgue, the coroner's office, letting us know that if they don't get more funding, that we may end up having some major issues with law enforcement and the hospitals being, their services now are 24/7, which is vital for those services to be available. And as a consumer and a healthcare provider, it would be awful to have to tell a family, well, you know, your loved one that was just killed in a unexpected accident or whatever has happened will have to be here until Monday, because that's when the morgue will be open again. So those were really two disconcerting things that I heard at that meeting that I didn't know if you guys were aware of, and wanted to make you aware that they are very short-funded and are looking at cutting services back in those areas or charging us on a per-use basis, which is, you know, just going to be a trickle-down to make things worse. In our situation, at least at the hospital in Keokuk, where we're already really under the gun for short reimbursement.
We've come a long ways from my first time 27 years ago. The coroner, the state coroner, was working out of a garage.
Yeah. And I've been around that long.
Yeah, so we finally got built the person a decent facility.
The funeral directors used to be the ambulance.
Yeah, so that we've come a long ways. But by the same token, I agree with you. You got to fund this stuff if you're going to continue to do it. Another problem we had was the turnaround on this stuff, was that, like you said, you know, a month down the road, you finally get the analysis.
Yeah.
And so we had added some people over the years to speed that up, speed that process up. Now, they may have, because of money crunch, they may be gone. And then the Department of Management doesn't replace them. That's what's happened with the correctional officers. You got to go through the Department of Management, and they got to say, oh, yeah, the funds here, the funds aren't here. And so... So that's the squeeze that happens. And,
well, those are two very valuable services, yeah. And you know, we certainly would hate to see them go away, yeah, or be reduced.
Yeah. And I will do what I can to make sure that. Jerry alluded a little bit to the Highway Patrol and correctional officers. Probably most people don't know this, but in the Fort Madison prison, the cell blocks, you have a control room, and you probably know about this stuff. And no one leaves, you never leave that control room. That person never leaves that control room. And then you have the second person who does the rounds. You have to go check everybody every 2 hours or every whatever the time frame is, to make sure ain't somebody hanging themselves or whatever. Right now, they are so short on the midnight shift that one person's on that range. He has to leave the control room to do his checks. And boy, that's the breach of security you could drive a truck through. And the department's aware of it. I brought it to their attention, and they said, yeah, we know, we're trying to get the help, and you know, they give you that spin all the time. So it is, it's really an accident waiting to happen, if you will. So I know that's going on.
I think we had another question back here.
I'm Bob Morwitz. I'm concerned about the governor's push on the corporate tax cut for the real estate tax cut. We need to target that for Main Street rather than the large companies. But there's no way to do that with a tax cut. So I think we should maintain our present rate. I know we need to be competitive with other states, but right now Iowa is rated the fifth most business-friendly state in the nation. And I don't think tax needs to do a whole lot for that, but I think we can use that money other places. And if we use that to support the Main Street program of Iowa and the Historic Preservation Commission, those are the people that use our downtown money. So they'll get more use out of that than they would for tax cuts. But most of these properties in downtown aren't that valuable. elsewhere to be more beneficial for the state. And a lot of the small businesses, they lease their properties. They don't own them. So they're not getting the relief anyway. So I think we need to look at the visitor.
Yeah, to some extent, you know, the renter allows for carry through on property tax, of course. And, you know, I guess I'd be concerned that if there was a cut, would it show up in a lessened rent or not? You know, in some cases, I'm sure it would. In some, it probably would not. But I don't disagree with what you're saying. I do think that I think we're going to have some kind of commercial property tax bill. I'm not sure it's going to get passed again this year. But if it does, I would prefer that it be cut off at a certain amount of valuation, you know, rather than, I gave in the committee meeting the other day, I gave the example. I asked the one of the people there from LSA, it's a Legislative Service Administration, they'd go out and do a lot of the research for us and tell us what a bill is going to cost and things like that. And I said, what was the highest value? Because he took a survey of a lot of Iowa counties. What was the highest priced parcel on that survey? I go, well, he wasn't sure. He said, downtown Des Moines, for example. You know, there's some big buildings down there that belong to some folks. And he said $60 million, maybe $100 million. Now, does that particular person need a 40% cut on that kind of a valuation? I don't think so. You know, I think we ought to tailor it to Main Street businesses, maybe a certain level of valuation. I'm not sure what that is, but my gosh, $100,000 would catch a lot of businesses. You know, a couple hundred thousand or maybe a half a million. Whatever that might be that keeps it from going to a Lowe's or any of the big box stores that, frankly, as I said earlier, it's going to go out of state anyway, the savings. It's going to add to their bottom line. It's not going to probably, you can't add salespeople if we don't have the demand for the parts and the things that they sell. So, you know, it just doesn't make sense to tailor that at somebody that's not going to turn around at least and stay in business because of it, or maybe hire an employee or two because of it. Yeah.
There's a local employer that I spoke to in the very recent past that took $35,000 for that four job.
Yeah.
On equipment costs. And he can't raise it and he can't borrow anymore because he's up there.
Yeah. Yeah.
About $35,000 to buy a piece of equipment for that four job.
Thank you. Yeah. We got one quick one, Susan.
Just let me follow up on that just a minute. There is something in legislation to help with that additional funding for economic development like that when they're up against the wall and they can't borrow more. I'm not sure what that one is, but I just want to say I had heard some folks talking about possible legislation on that.
Just one real quick. We're talking a little bit about process and informing and that kind of thing. I appreciate the information, Jerry, you send out.
Susan, did you have something quickly?
Just quickly, you don't need to respond necessarily, but I was really concerned to see that the community college funding is still in such a dire situation. The budget proposal still has us $27 million as a system behind where we were in 2009.
Right.
And in addition to that, the reduction proposed in job training funds really cuts at the core of a program that helps our local business and industry keep their work skill trained and bring people on. So I'm really concerned about it.
One of the things that when I've talked to some business people who come here or say they're glad they're here or wanting to come here, was there's two things that seems to surface. And one of them is the work quality of the people. Iowa people, for some reason, because we beat up our kids and they made them work when it's little or whatever, but the quality of work that they produce and also the community college system we have willing to train. Now, they may still have to do some training in a factory, but the basic stuff, how to deal with laser cutters or all that kind of stuff. You can do that in community colleges, and they really appreciate that. So those are two issues that, when I talk to those kind of people, that surfaces And then, of course, the transportation system, that's all.
Yes, go ahead.
And now the Regis universities in the proposal, looking pretty good.
Yeah.
So we need to maybe tap a little of that, I don't know.
But in the interest of time, we're going to have to wrap it up. We certainly appreciate the participation. Want to thank Senator Frazee and Representative Kearns for being here, and I think a round of applause would be appropriate. I'm sure they may be around for a few more minutes if you want to try to catch them and ask some questions.